on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. It is March 10th, 2015, and today I have with me Justin Klein.
Always good to be here with you, Steve.
I appreciate it. Do you think the stock market has gotten used to the lower oil prices? Well, whether it has or not, the lower prices per barrel has changed the dynamics of the world economies when it comes to oil. That kind of financial disruption usually signals opportunity somewhere, as well as caution in other places as well. So that's going to be our focus for our free webinar coming up on March 19th. There's a lot of interest in this topic, and for good reason. So I hope you will join us on the 19th for this 90-minute session. That's 30 minutes longer than we normally do our webinars. So just like our Saturday morning in-person conferences in San Jose, we'll look beyond the headlines to the real opportunities surfacing with a drop in oil prices. First, we'll examine world oil economies, OPEC versus U.S. versus the world, how politics play a part, what countries are going to benefit, which ones are going to suffer from lower oil prices. So how can the average investor profit from collapsing oil prices? Which sectors and industries should you consider? Which will benefit from lower oil prices? Which are going to suffer? And that's going to be during our webinar. Justin and I will break down the industry components, focus on shale oil, sand oil out of Canada, as well as deep water operations and the normal drilling that goes on in the Middle East and elsewhere.
Yeah, and we're also going to have about a 30-minute Q&A session after that you can ask us any question you want, whether it's about individual oil stocks or an individual stock in another sector or just broad sweeping questions as well that I think a lot of people will get a lot out of as well.
Yeah, we're going to let you post your questions on the screen, and we're going to try to get as many of them as we can. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, just looking at fundamentals and technicals, and we're going to try to show them to you while we're looking at them so you can get an idea of what we're looking at and give you an idea why we like it or don't like it, whatever stock or industry you want to talk about.
Yeah, and I think it'll get a good idea of what you should be looking at as well. You know, because a lot of people, you don't know what you don't know. That's what my grandpa always said, and I think it's a great quote. And you can be able to see what us as professionals, we look at least on the surface level. Obviously, we can't go in depth. That takes hours of time. But, you know, from a surface level perspective, you'll see what kind of tools we have and the data that we consider when looking at a particular name.
We're going to start it at 6 p.m. Pacific time and go to 7:30. It's free, but you do need to register. So get the code so you can log on. You can do that at investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. Okay? InvestTalk is all about answering your questions, as you know, but we want to hear your opinions as well. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Our number is 888-99-CHART. I hope you'll use it and give us a call. First, let's go to George and San Mateo. How you doing, George?
I'm doing good. Got a question for him. I've been looking to get a spot to maybe get into a security, software security stock, and the symbol is FTNT. And I thought they looked pretty good, but I wanted to see what your thoughts were. And I'm looking at more a long-term play on it for down the future. Okay. But want to see what your opinions are.
Okay, this is Fortinet. I guess that's how you say it.
Fortinet?
Fortinet. Symbol FTNT. Develops unified threat management system to provide security and networking functions through integrated circuit. Growing very, very fast. This is a $5.5 billion company that's growing 25% in sales per quarter, and that has increased from 14 to 20% of, you know, a year or so ago. Earnings are going to be up 4% this year, then up 28% next year. They don't have any debt. Management owns 17%, and mutual funds are buyers. Why was the problem? Is there a problem with this company? Well, it's pricey. That's the only problem, and I don't know if that is, quote-unquote, a problem.
Well,
it is expensive.
It's the problem with the stock in general because that it is expensive. I think the other problem I would see is, you know, you talked about sales growth at about 25% or so, and that's great, but their earnings growth really is, I don't want to say non-existent, but it really hasn't done much when it comes to actually creating more earnings. Back in 2012, we got 2011, they made 45 cents a share. 2012, they made 53 cents a share. Well, you would think with this huge growth, they would increase their earnings dramatically. Well, last year they only made 48 cents a share, and that's down a penny from 2013 at 49 cents. And this year they only expect to make 50 cents a share. So where is this translating into earnings growth? That's probably the biggest red flag for me, is that earnings aren't going up, even though sales are, and the stock has been going up, and it's very pricey at these levels.
Well, but see, next year it's going to be 64 cents. So I'm wondering, why didn't the last few years... why the sales stagnated? And my question might, my answer might be, they were building out their infrastructure, or they were doing something that was costing them money.
Yeah, well,
but we'd have to check that out.
Yeah, well, if you look at their capital spending, it hasn't really gone up that dramatically. In 2012, it was $22 million on operating cash flow of about $184 million, and last year is $32 million in capital spending. So it doesn't seem like they're spending a ton of money. And so I'm wondering, and the biggest issue here for me is their margins have been going down. Their margins were 14.5% in 2011. Now trailing 12 months are down to 3%.
That would explain why earnings have.
Yeah, so you see sales are going up great, but they're doing that in the at the expense of margins. And, you know, how low can that go? Are those margins going to eventually go negative? That's kind of what worries me with this name. I think it's a great area. But my biggest worry, not only with those margin numbers, is that this is an area that is very hyped right now. You know, the security sector, yeah. And everyone's so there's a lot of money going into that space, and that's probably why this is going up. It's not really going up on profitability, because profitability has been stagnant even though sales are going up.
So it's a little expensive, George. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Today, many see an embarrassment of riches when it comes to overseas options. So could Warren Buffett be wrong about global stocks? Because he's saying, him and Bogle, you know, Vanguard founder, saying, you know, they see no reason to leave the United States to invest outside the United States in other markets. Maybe we should talk about that. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. I'm not convinced of that. I also want to discuss the ECB QE, quantitative easing. I think it kicked off today or yesterday. 60 billion euros a month is what they're going to buy. Did you see what kind of return they were getting on their buys? Anyways, I want to talk about that. What is that going to do to their stock market, our stock market, their economy, our economy? Is it going to do anything? So we'll talk about that. And besides Apple Watch, when everybody was watching the Apple Watch announcement, what else was going on in Apple that no one's not paying much attention to, but I think might have long-term benefits that maybe we should look at? I'm not saying Apple Watch is not a great device or whatever. It's going to be successful. But I don't think the Apple Watch is going to be the it thing necessarily. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. And is the bull market old? Now, you're going to see a lot of people say the bull market's been around since the 2009 when it finally turned around. Is that really true? What's the definition of bull market? Do we ignore what happened in 2011? We're going to talk about that. Wouldn't maybe that happen? Maybe 2011 started a new
new
bull market after falling.
You're saying there was a big drop of summer, right? August, September timeframe.
Yeah. And what was that drop? See, a lot of people don't know or are ignoring that drop, saying that's just part of the bull market correction. What if it wasn't? Because it just barely eked into a possible bear market at 20% drop. So I want to explore that a little bit.
Yeah, the S&P went from in the high 1300s at that time down to a low of the right around 110 or 1000, 1100. Sorry, 1100.
So is that enough? What did the Dow do? What did the Nasdaq do? Anyways, I'm just arguing or discussing whether or not the bull market is really old or just middle aged. Anyway, those are the things we're going to talk about. What do you want to talk about? Let's hear what you want to talk about. Okay, we schedule 2 or 3 days each month to meet face-to-face. I do that with a small number of our listeners for individual retirement reviews. I do this personally at our offices. I was in San Diego today. I can do it through Skype or telephone. I am going to be in the San Ramon area March 17th and then San Jose on the 18th. And if you want to reserve your time with me, just go to investtalk.com, click on schedule a meeting, and I'll have someone at the office set up an appointment to meet with you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Dave in Sunnyvale, who wants to talk about covered calls. How you doing, Dave?
Good. I had a question about adding a ETF such as PBP. It's a covered call ETF to an already diversified portfolio, sort of to lower volatility. Not for income, but just to lower volatility.
Is it P ball?
PBP.
PBP, okay. I got it.
PBP.
Okay, that's an S&P buy. Okay. Exchange-traded funds, sinking performance corresponding to the
S&P 500 buy-write index, which is a covered call index. So what this is doing is it's owning the S&P 500, but what it's doing is it's writing call options on the underlying index to create income. Now, when the market's going up quickly or dramatically, you're not going to get the upside or as much upside of the market as you would with just owning, say, SPY. But you also won't get as much downside. Not that there won't be any downside, but you won't get as much downside because that income will be buffering this ETF if when the market goes down.
But remember, you're owning the underlying index. So mm-hmm. The underlying index goes down 10%. That underlying value is going to go down 10%. But since you're going to collect the premiums mm-hmm. on the covered calls, meaning it won't go down as much. Yeah, but it's still going to be pretty painful.
So, for example, today the SPY was down 1.62% and the PBP was only down about 1%. So
there you go. Yeah. It shows you, how it can go down. It just will go down less.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with it, Dave. Just be aware that, it's not the end all, for investing. It's just that it helps.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the expense ratio on it's kind of high for me. It's about 75 basis points.
Well, it would be because that's an expensive thing they're doing.
Yeah, well, it's just it takes more management, right? Yeah, S&P 500, it's easy. You buy a list of stocks and boom, let it go. And there's not a whole lot of management going on. But when you're writing call options all the time.
You do it every month. You constantly work at it.
Yeah, so I can see that. But it's not a bad fund. Per se, or a bad thing to add a portfolio to mitigate your risk factor, but it is kind of expensive for me when it comes to the expense ratio.
I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. We are portfolio managers for Klein Pavlis Peasley, our firm. 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. You can do it right now on any money topic you want to talk about on InvestTalk here. So we're ready for your calls right now.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. And Steve hopes that you'll sign up for our free wealth webinar coming up next week on March the 19th, The Upside of Lower Oil Prices. Again, it's coming March 19th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Free sign up right now on InvestTalk.com.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Ray in San Francisco. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm fine. Thanks, Steve, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question on stock trading and income tax. Can I use stock trading as a business? Because I made quite a bit of profits in the last few years, but I'm not sure if I can use that as a business. Can I?
Well, there's certain. No, I'm not an expert in this area. This is not our area of expertise. But to use it as a business, as you're making money, It's got to be your primary business. It can't be just something you're – there's certain rules. I don't know all the rules. In other words, if you manage money for somebody else, yeah, there you go. You got a business. You get paid by them? Sure. Okay, great. That's a business. And then you can manage your own money as well. Mm-hmm. But it's not – I can't. You can't just do stock trading and say, hey, I have a business, and yet you have a full-time job over here doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah, and the main point of having a business is so that you can have expenses, I'm assuming, against that business.
And make earnings and costs and profits or losses.
Yeah.
So you've got to have – the IRS has to say it's got to be a viable business. You can lose money. That's not the issue.
But
if you're trading it just on your own account, I don't see how – I am not an expert, but I don't think you can just
do that. You're not a CPA.
You need a
You do understand business. You've owned many businesses over the years. So, the only point that I could see of making it qualifying as a business is if you can have expenses to write off against that business. But the expenses need to be related to the business. So what? Going out to eat or buying X, Y, and Z. How is that really related?
Taking yourself out to dinner is not
a
client.
Maybe buying a new computer. So you can trade.
Yeah.
Paying for software.
And you can write off the cost of trades.
Yeah.
But that's already done by your profits and losses.
Yeah, whether it's a business or not. So I would consult an accountant first. But my gut would say, no, I don't think the IRS would allow that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Rake, appreciate your call.
Well, I was thinking that if I have a business, separate business entities, because some of the wash sales rules, I can take it as a loss, right? Because individually, I don't think you can take wash sales as a loss. And I can do mark-to-market accounting so that, I can, at the year end, I don't have to, show all the money, right?
I see what he's saying. So he's basically saying instead of having to sell a stock and take those losses, right? Have you actually make that transaction? You can say it's a business, mark-to-market accounting. Well, I have a loss, and therefore this is a loss, even though I haven't sold it. I did lose money this year because it's lower than what I paid for it.
Right. Talk to an accountant. We're not the right people to ask that question, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Ray. Philip in San Francisco. How you doing, Philip?
How are you doing, Steve? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I was asking, originally I was asking about TLT, Tom, Larry, Tom, but actually that is more closely derived from looking at the 30-year Treasury bond index rate, which is what I'm looking at right now.
Uh-huh.
The 30-year bond rate. And if you bring up a chart on that, 30-year bond, you see that there's a big bounce that it's taking right now. And if you look on the candlestick chart, it looks pretty bullish on the upside. So I don't know about buying TLT, because if this chart is telling us much on the 30-year bond, on the candlestick, it looks like it's just an inside week, and it's heading higher still rates. So I may need to be cautious about TLT, because of that, because TLT, when rates go up, TLT goes down.
Yeah. TLT, everybody, is the exchange-traded fund seeking a performance corresponding to the Barclays U.S. 20-year Treasury Index. So it's an ETF tracking the movement of the
20, long-term bonds. Mainly, it says 20-plus year. It's pretty much the 30-year.
And if interest rates go down, that bond value goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And vice versa.
Yeah. So the question is our interest rates going to go down lower? Well, everybody's been pouring into our dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Our dollar's gotten very strong. Why? Well, because our economy, compared to everybody else's economy, or a lot of everybody else's, looks much better. So they're buying our dollars.
But now he's talking about interest rates and whether or not buying TLT is a good thing. If interest rates continue to go lower, owning TLT would be a good thing. But if interest rates reverse higher, which they have been over the past month or so, TLT is not something you want to be in. What I would say on the 30-year is you had a really big sell-off bar at the end of last year in December. This was January. January, huge sell-off bar in January. And the high of that bar was about $2.78, a yield of 2.78%. If it can close on a monthly basis, end of any month, back above that, then I could say, okay, the trend is now reversed. But as long as at any month, I'm looking at a monthly chart, and that's what you're looking at longer term, is as long as it stays below that 2.78% mark at the close of any month, it's still in a downturn. And so right now we're at 2.719. So we're still below that.
Okay. Appreciate the call, Philip. Thank you. For everybody else, you probably say, huh, what the heck are they talking about?
Talking about the 30-year treasury yield.
Yeah, whether it goes up and down, and you can play that by buying a TLT, which tracks that.
So, well, I think that it's very important for everybody to know and understand, because if interest rates start going up, it's going to change the dynamics of the entire market.
Yeah, but remember, we don't know when that might happen, but the Fed said they're going to raise rates by this year sometime. We'll see if that happens. Coming up next half hour, many investors run into trouble with their retail sector holdings because retail competition is extremely fierce and changes happen quickly. That's what we're going to talk about. 888-99-JAR is our number. Give us a call. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? Okay, what about Warren Buffett? Could he be wrong about investing in global stocks?
Yeah, he says whoever benefited during the past 238 years by betting against America. He said most assuredly America's best days lie ahead, and that's why he thinks that's where you should be invested.
Well, you know, that argument is not invalid, but if you look at history, and you know, you don't go back 238 years, but you look at history in the last, 30, 50 years, maybe 30 years, and take a look at what have other foreign markets done better than our markets, and you'll find that they often do better than our markets. Yep. It's not that you should not avoid them. You know, I understand buying America. There's times when you really want to buy America, and I understand that completely. But there's also the fact that you could diversify away from America when it's overpriced.
Yeah, and if you look at the difference in valuation measures from U.S. stocks to other developed nations like Europe or regions like Europe, and then even emerging markets, all those other foreign markets are cheaper from almost any metric you want to use. Now everyone else is going to point to, well, Europe, they're not growing, and China is slowing down, and Russia's in a recession, and same with South America. There's a lot of issues there. All these problems around the world. And America's great, right?
Yeah.
Well, but in our economic growth is better than most places in the world, and that's what people are going to point to. But the problem is that if you repeated studies, not just one study, multiple studies throughout history has shown there's little or no long-term correlation between the rate of economic growth and investment returns. So if you think, because GDP is growing up, that's definitely going to be the place to be in that particular country, well, you're not thinking the right way.
Yeah, not that if you're in recession, the stock market has already collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
It collapsed some time ago. Think about our own recent recession, the deep recession we had. The stock market collapsed before you could look back and say, oh, we are in a deep recession. Well, the same thing is true in any other market, Europe, China, I don't care where you look. Every market that happens to, and the opportunity, just like here in the United States, is when a collapse happened and now you're coming out. Now, when that coming out is, no one knows. No one has this crystal ball. We don't know. But the opportunity means those stocks got cheap.
Yeah. Well, you can. There's certain factors you can look at to realize whether the economy is improving or not, and coming from a trough, right? And whether or not, I think if you look at Europe, they're probably closer to some sort of a trough.
Yep.
Than they are some sort of a peak, right? And in a peak, that's probably where you don't want to be invested. And to talk about economic growth, and this is a great example of why economic growth is not a great indicator of whether equity returns are going to be good. You look between 1969 and 1982 in the U.S. economy, that is pretty much in the heart of what we call a secular bear market. The U.S. economy, over those 13 years, 14 years, expanded about 50%. Yet, if you were a buy and hold investor during that time, measured by the MSCI Standard U.S. Stock Index, you lost about a third of your money.
Yeah, so you
even though the economy went up 50%.
Yeah, you can't just say the economy's growing, stock market's going up. That's not necessarily so. It helps, but doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen.
Because if you come from an overvalued place, you can still go down and the economy goes up, but because you started from an overvalued market, the future returns aren't so hot.
We're here live 4 to 5 Pacific time every day. If you call then, we can talk to you. But we can still answer your questions if you call in between programs and leave the question on our machine. 888-99-CHARTER is our 24-hour listener line. Here's a call.
Hi, this is Mark calling from Lancaster, New York. I was wondering about taking a position in Triangle Petroleum Corporation, ticker Tom, Peter, Larry, Mark. Just wondering what your thoughts are on growth for this company. I hear lots about the Bakken shale or the Bakken play in North Dakota. I'd like to get a piece of that. Thanks.
Now, of course, it's going to be this type of stock will be the subject of our upcoming webinar. And this is Triangle Petroleum out of Denver, engaged in acquisition, exploration, development of unconventional shale oil reserves in the Williston Basin. Now, you're obviously banking on, it's a very small company, $373 million market cap. You're obviously banking on a turnaround because it's already been crushed. Okay, it went from, let's say, around $12 a share. Now it's at $4.88. Okay, and it still has growth of sales. Still does. And it still has earnings, but the earnings are falling fast.
Yeah, and this is the Williston Basin. That's in Montana. And this is the North Dakota, this is the Bakken, really, is what they're talking about. And this is one going to be, like Steve said, this is going to be one of the focuses of our webinar coming up later this month, is not all shale is created equal. Everything's, shale is shale, and shale cost to get it out of the ground is the same.
Nope.
It's very different between regions. And some regions produce a lot of oil. Some regions produce a lot of natural gas. So it depends on where they're drilling. And this particular, the Bakken area is where a lot of oil is produced, but it's a lot more expensive than other shale regions, which I won't talk about. And you'll have to tune into the webinar if you want to get an in-depth look at that. But it's one of the more expensive, the most expensive areas to get oil out of the ground. And so this is why earnings are supposed to go from 58 cents in 2015, which is
this year,
to a penny next year.
Yeah, and part of the problem with the shale in the Balkan area is transportation. It's part of the problem. We're going to go in more depth of that in our webinar, so hopefully you can listen in and join us.
Yeah, to me this is a very high risk name. It's cheap from a price to book ratio, but you know that could be adjusted, you know, based on the price of oil. They're burning a lot of cash. They have a decent amount of debt. I don't think it's extremely high, but it's not low either. So I would say this is extremely risky.
Time for InvestTalk 101, lessons in basic investing strategies. And let's talk about retail stocks. Evaluating the retail sector is difficult because many retailers have a variety of fashion lines, product offerings that are constantly changing. It's very difficult. It's, you know, the returns are not as steady as in yet some other industries. As an investor, you need to concentrate on your analysis on four key metrics: return on revenue, return on invested capital, return on total assets, and return of capital employed. If you don't know what those things mean, and you're trying to invest in this area, you're probably going to fail. Return on revenue means net income from top line revenue. So return on your revenue. How much money are you getting for that? On the sales of your stuff, how much are you making?
Similar to kind of margins, net margins.
Yes. Return on invested capital, which is different, is generally the amount of profit generated per store. The faster the store can return invested capital, the quicker it will become profitable. That's kind of how you got to find that out. How many stores are they? How they operate? You know, McDonald's is very famous about this. Same store sales month over month over month. All the other retailers do the same thing. Return on total assets explains how much operating profit it is making from the assets it has. Like return on revenues, this ratio will vary depending on the business.
Yeah, some businesses, they need a lot of assets, meaning a lot of buildings and inventory to carry to produce their profits. Some are maybe online only. Think of like Amazon.com, right? Yeah. They also need to have a lot of inventory, and they have a lot of distribution centers. So that's another type of asset. So not all retailers have the same type of assets and the same overhead as other retailers.
And then there's return rate on capital employed. How much capital did you put to work? And that kind of gives you demonstrates how efficient that the company is in making money on its assets. This is not an easy thing. People think it is, but it's not. You kind of look at all the various, different returns that you get and find out then you got to compare from one store to the next. It's not that easy, one company to the next. So anyways, these are indicators that you need to start looking at and analyze, okay, if you're going to be an investor in the retail sector. And that's InvestTalk 101. If you have a question on the topic or would like to ask directly, just go to InvestTalk.com. That's InvestTalk.com with two T's. Click on the button that says Contact Justin or Contact Steve.
Choosing the right investment products, adjusting to life's surprise events. If it's about money and it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Manu in Fremont. How are you doing, Manu?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I don't know if you may be able to answer that or not. Fed actually released $4 trillion into the market. I analyze lots of companies. They are reporting sales in terms of billions. Now, where that $4 trillion is going to be back into Fed money, they put that money out of air, how that is going to be resolved, and what impact it may have on the sales or overall market. Because if they don't take that money back, that means it's a... I don't want to say treason, but it is like a treason and cheating.
Okay, so Manuel, we're talking about the $4 trillion that the Federal Reserve has on its balance sheet. And they have $4 trillion in assets, mostly made up of mortgages and treasuries and loans of different kinds, okay? $4 trillion. First of all, it probably is not going to come back into the market like you may think. They're probably going to hold on to them and let them mature. Now, they may sell some of that back into the market, but no one really knows.
Yeah. Now, what this does is when they buy these assets is it's supposed to provide liquidity into the marketplace, right? Because they're printing money. Yes, that's where the money is coming from. The money is being printed. They won't say it's printed because it wasn't really on a printing press. It's really a click of a button on a computer that creates the money. They are printing this money and it's out there into the market. It's going to the holders of treasuries and these mortgage-backed securities that they bought. And the big question is, a lot of it is the banks, they're holding onto this capital, right? They have a lot of excess capital on their balance sheet that the Fed has been hoping that they lend out. That's their goal, is to get the Fed to lend out.
That's what the European QE is goal.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah, that's ultimately the central bank's goal, is that the banks get this money and they go and lend out this money to the economy, and it creates new
economic
credit.
Activity.
And economic activity, exactly.
So then maybe they want to, see, when they buy the bonds and the treasuries from the banks, that puts money back in the bank's hand, cash. What are they going to do with that money? Well, the Federal Reserve is hoping, because the Federal Reserve bought these assets, that the banks will turn that over and build, lend it out to build factories and new this and that, whatever. And what really happened is much of it went into the financial market.
Yeah, I would say
stock market.
Exactly, because it creates... Because where are these companies lending? Remember this report that we read a couple months ago. What the biggest areas of lending, right? Lending in our market today is lending against brokerage accounts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Where you have people who have $500,000, right? And these brokers are trying to find new revenue sources. And the new revenue source now isn't lending, borrowing against your house, right? Everyone that was trying to take money out of their home, home equity line of credit. Well, now today it's lending against your portfolio, your brokerage portfolio. And so the big question to me is, what happens if the market goes down? You got and all of a sudden now you have all this money lent out based on the holdings of your stocks, and now the value of your stocks goes down. I think it's increased the risk definitely in the market.
So, Manny, you're asking, where is this $4 trillion going to go? What is the Fed going to do with it? I don't think they're going to do anything with it. I think they're just going to keep it on the books and let it run off.
Yeah, they'll eventually let it. Right now they're reinvesting it.
Is that where, I mean, let's say I'm working. For me, it's basically killing my savings and my value.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Fed has created money from nowhere. They are not paying anything on it, and yeah, they are just generating money. Is that fair?
Well, now you're talking about fair. Fair? Is it fair? Well, the Fed has made money where you can't make money safely in a bank CD anymore because it just won't pay much.
Yeah.
So that's what the Fed has done. They did it on purpose.
Yeah.
They want you to invest that money.
Fair is subjective, you know. Yeah. You know, it's done had a lot of unintended consequences. Like Steve said, all these savers, think of retirees that are trying to learn, live off their investments, and
they're
need
suffering.
Income. Well, they can no longer get income safely, good income safely. So what are they doing? They're going out into junk bonds and all these high-risk securities to get this yield. And, you know, when it's eventually going to come back to bite a lot of people. And I think the Fed is overlooking this.
Manu, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, we're talking. Hopefully we'll get to the QE in Europe because they're doing the same thing now.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen? Well, how can it be much different than what happened to us?
I think ultimately it's bad policy. QE is bad policy. In the short term, it looks fine. But I think long term, I think it's value destroying for the economy.
Yeah, how do you get out of it? You
know,
that's what the Fed is faced with now.
Yeah.
I'm glad you chose to spend this hour with us. We appreciate it. Our money management firm is KPP Financial, which offers choices, but not so many that your choices get confusing. You can see the lists and descriptions right there on our website at investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. With interest rates predicted to rise in 2015, what should you do with your mutual fund bond holdings right now? If rates rise, will the sky fall? That's our talking point next time. Be sure to join us on Invest Talk.
And you know, there's a big if rates rise. Even though the Fed has said they're going to raise rates, or kind of indicated that they're going to raise rates, what if happens if next month's jobs report is cut in half? You think that they're going to be in a big rush to raise rates? And the dollar's gotten so strong, if they raise rates, the dollar's just going to get stronger and stronger and stronger, and that's going to affect the economy on the negative side. So raising rates is not a foregone conclusion, in my opinion. I think we still need to – we'll see.
I think what happened – I think they will raise rates, but I think the market will freak out so much that they will pause, and they will pause for a very long time.
That's very possible.
Yeah. I think ultimately at some point we get to a recession before we get to more rate rises, and then they just go back to zero.
That's very possible. Or negative, which they are –
that's what QE is. QE is basically negative interest rates.
Bill in Santa Cruz. How you doing, Bill?
Hi, Steve. Excellent. Thank you. I got a two for one today, Steve and Justin. That's great.
I appreciate it. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I listen to you guys every day. You're fantastic. I can't speak highly enough of your show and what you guys do for public out here. So I have Airgas, that's ARG, and it's something I've heard of the company before, but I just recently came to my attention, and I just wonder, it looks like a real strong chart over the last couple of years, and now it's, pulling back with the market, but if you could just give me your little fundamental analysis.
Sure.
And if you think there's a good buy point in the near term, what that would be.
Me and Justin and I both looked at this during the break, and we both feel it's a fundamentally a pretty strong company. Fundamentally, we like this company. Aerogas, everybody. It distributes industrial, medical, and specialty gas, and also gas containers and in their related industry, you know, related products. They're going to make $4.97 per share this year. That's 5% more than last. And then next year, another 12%. They're growing 5, 6% the last couple of quarters sales. The only complaint you could have is it's a little pricey.
Yeah. But, if you look at based on – that's based on earnings, earnings per share. Yeah. If you look at cash flow, you know, cash flow is pretty strong and steady. Profitability is strong and steady. They continue to increase their earnings on a steady basis, which, it's not huge growth, but it's steady growth. And, you know, I rather have steady, moderate growth than huge, unstable growth, which most companies that have big growth, they're usually unstable growth. And so I like the steadiness of this. The biggest issue is that it is cyclical, so you get into a recession, you're probably going to have some issues. But I think as a long-term hold, I think this is a good company. It pays about 2% dividend, which isn't great, but you know, which isn't super high. But the return, the payout ratio is only about 40-something percent. And
payout ratio is the dividend.
Yeah, about
they pay out
the, about 44. They pay out about 44% of their earnings in that form of the dividend. They recently raised their dividend last year, early part of last year, and they're probably going to do it again. So I think this is a good dividend grower.
So we'd like it to be 60% or less, and it's at 40-something. On a chart, because you asked about what's a good buy point, well,
I'd say in the high or the low, right below 110, 110, a little bit lower than that, I think that would be a good entry point.
Okay, Bill?
If you were, would this be a type of stock that you might hold in one of your portfolios?
I'm sorry.
Think he said, is it one of the type of stock that we hold in one of our portfolios? Yes, this would be a type of stock we would hold in one of our portfolios, yes.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. ARG with the symbol, everybody, ARG. The ECB embarked on their 60 billion per month QE, 60 billion euros per month they're buying. Now, do you remember ours was, I think, 80 billion? Mm-hmm. And or 85, was it 85?
85 yeah? billion.
85
yeah.
billion.
Yeah, I think it was 45 billion in treasuries, $40 billion in
now,
mortgages.
Will this help their economy? We touched on it before. That's the hope by the ECB. Frankly, my thinking is, like our QE, which may have helped our economy somewhat, it certainly helped the stock market a lot more.
It helps financial assets, inflate financial assets.
So I'm thinking the same thing may be true. And did you notice that the QE that they bought, I don't know if you saw it this morning, Justin, but they had to pay negative returns on that?
Because
they had to pay people
Sell
them.
Just like with our QE, the market moved before they actually went. They said, we're going to do this in a month. Well, guess what? Other people are going to go in there and buy those same assets, knowing that you're going to go buy them from them at higher prices.
So they had to pay people interest instead of earn interest on those.
Because they're forced buyers. They already know they're going to buy it. No matter what the price is, they're going to do it.
Before we close for the hour, you can register now for our free webinar coming up on the 19th at 6 p.m. Pacific time, where you have expanded to 90 minutes from an hour. That's pretty late for me. I want you to know that. The upside of lower oil prices. You can register now at investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein. And for everybody at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today. And let's hook up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.